We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
NPR meteorologist Paul Huttner is in the studio with me. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Good morning, Carrie. Good to see you again.
Paul, Donald Trump has said that climate change is a, quote, Chinese hoax. Now, I do want to say that there were other points in the campaign where he disavowed having said that. Mm-hmm. Do you have a clear idea on what he thinks about climate change itself, the science of it?
My sense is that he does believe that he does think it's not valid.
He doesn't believe in the science.
I don't think he believes in the science. And
okay.
I know that a lot of the people he's going to be rolling into his cabinet don't believe in the science, and that a good percentage of the Congress, which he now controls essentially from the same political party, doesn't believe in the science. But that said, you know, I think it's clear my eyes are open on this. And I do think we're going to see a significant change, almost a 180 in climate change policy by the U.S. government. I don't think that's the whole story. I think there's really two tracks going on here. There's government policy, and there's sort of the market forces and clean energy revolution, that the train has already left the station on that. You know, renewables are already growing very quickly, the solar boom, wind. And the other thing here is the talk of coal. Coal has been beat up in the market by natural gas.
Yep.
Natural gas, not the optimal, but it's more climate friendly than coal. And I don't see this big rush back to coal when natural gas is so much cheaper. And many of the energy companies around the U.S. have already sort of made that commitment, that shift to natural gas and to renewables. So market forces may be moving in a different direction than what could be climate policy from a Trump presidency.
Let's bring our guest in, and that'll be a good question for her as well. Rebecca Lieber is with us. She's Grist.com's climate politics and policy reporter, and she's with us today from Washington. Rebecca, welcome. It's good to have you on the Climate Cast.
Thanks for having me on.
What do you think about what Paul said, that policy is one thing, but what's happening within companies who have to prepare for climate change is another?
I think that's mostly right. You are seeing the energy mix on two tracks, and the markets will continue. That's the optimistic take, that coal has been on the decline for the past decade, and the U.S. is already about halfway meeting some of its domestic climate goals. On the other hand, you're going to see a complete 180 shift in the U.S. being a world leader on climate policy to taking a back seat.
And what does that mean when you say that?
Well, the two top things on Trump's plan for when he enters office is to, quote unquote, cancel the Paris Climate Agreement and also repeal the Clean Power Plan. And those are two hallmarks of Obama's presidency and his achievements on climate change. And this might not happen as quickly as Trump promises it can, that he can undo the amount of work that's gone into preparing for the Clean Power Plan. And on the worldwide side, the Paris Climate Deal went into effect just last week. So this will take a lot longer for Trump to untangle, but it does have big implications for global climate action.
Rebecca, here's my question about the Paris Accord. Other countries made commitments, and the commitments that we made influenced them, and what they made influenced us. Might other countries still continue with their commitments, and is that going to, you know, apply some other international pressure outside of the treaty to the United States and to President-elect Trump?
There are a lot of unknowns right now. It's interesting to note that there is a global climate conference underway at this moment in Morocco, and that began on Monday, and they got to react in real time to Trump's election. So there is a degree of panic among negotiators who worked very hard to put Paris into force. On that note, we might see other countries step up in the place of the U.S. and taking a leadership role even more so than they have in the absence of U.S. leadership. But there's yet another unknown, because the U.S. has promised climate financing to developing countries.
Oh,
and that's been
right.
A big carrot to getting developing nations on the same pathway as developed nations in tackling climate change.
So if the U.S. withdrew that money, yeah, that could make a difference as to what some of these developing nations do.
Yeah, Trump has promised to cut all climate finance and federal climate funding. So without that, it's unclear what other nations will do. And at the same time, he can also undermine the next round of negotiations coming up in a few years.
Rebecca, that's interesting. Let's take that thread for a minute. There was a lot of talk about jobs during the election and bringing back jobs. We know that renewable energy, sort of the clean energy revolution, is generating a lot of jobs. I think the latest U.S. Bureau of Labor stats say about 3.8 million clean energy job openings in 2014. A lot of those coming from renewables, efficiency, things like that. So, if funding is pulled from some of the support that's going into renewables, I guess my question is, what kind of pressure might be applied from businesses who are making headway in the renewable energy sector?
It's a really good question, because the story is a lot more complicated than what you heard on the campaign trail, where business is on one side against climate change and climate change action, and on the other side you have activists. It's much more complicated than that. You have utilities that have made huge headway in integrating clean energy into their mix, and they support the Clean Power Plan. While you have more fossil fuel reliant utilities lobbying against it. So that might be where we see the silver lining in a Trump administration, that businesses do take on a bigger role in promoting clean energy. And you already have giant tech companies like Google, Apple, investing in solar and renewables. So we might still see that continue, and there's no reason to think that Trump undoes all of that progress.
Hey, Paul, I just want to know what you and Rebecca were just saying about energy companies. I mean, we've seen this in Minnesota.
Yes.
XL Energy and some of the other energy companies are mixing in a lot of renewable energy.
That's right. And part of that has been state mandates.
Right.
So let's bring the states into it. There can be state energy policies as well going forward. There's contracts out for that.
Right.
That's not going to change in the short term. My question too, Carrie, is what about companies like Tesla or bigger solar and wind investment companies going forward that are creating these jobs, that are creating revenues from these? They're not just going to go away.
Rebecca, back to you. That's a really good question about it. Like a company like Tesla that's building a product that is based on renewable energy. They're not going to get government funding for that anyway. You'd think they'd proceed anyway, wouldn't you?
I think the government would have less impact on major companies that have already gotten behind clean energy and see this as not just a good investment because for moral reasons, but they're doing it to shave costs.
Right.
On the other hand, policy does matter, and you can see in what Trump administration won't accomplish in pushing forward on clean energy. So Clinton had promised big rooftop solar initiative, and we might see efforts on that side stall because of pulled funding.
Rebecca Lieber is with us if you've tuned in on the Climate Cast. She's a Grist reporter on climate politics and policy, and with us today from Washington as we examine Donald Trump's potential policy on climate change. We've had some statements from him about the fact that he believes that the science of climate change is not valid, as Paul noted. And at one point, he called it a Chinese hoax. Mm. But we're also talking about how, as Paul has brought up, market forces are rolling along on climate policy, and some of that may not change.
You know, Rebecca brings up rooftop solar. That's interesting. Target, of course, which is a major company here, now leads the world in rooftop solar.
I didn't know that.
Generation. Hmm. Yeah, it surpassed Walmart in the last year. And we've, of course, have had folks on this show from major Fortune 500 companies like
Ecolab
General Mills.
And others.
Ecolab, Best Buy. Best Buy, bottom line, they save $42 million a year through reducing their carbon footprint. So the incentive is there for companies' bottom line to continue to go greener on energy. And again, that's why I think I don't see that changing. I don't see why a different change in White House policy is going to affect that when a lot of these companies have realized, hey, wait a minute, we can save money. There's market demand for this. Mm-hmm. They're getting feedback from their customers saying, is what you're doing climate friendly? So this is the train has left the station on this a little bit. I don't think it's going to stop, turn around, and come
Rebecca,
back.
if you have another view on that, go ahead.
Yeah, not to be the overly cynical one, but I think you saw last year, the last few years, as Obama really stepped up on climate change, a lot of observers, economists note that leadership does matter, and it does send a signal to businesses, and it sends a signal that fossil fuels are on the way out and clean energy is on the way up. So we're obviously going to see mixed signals on that now. And I think there is an extent that will matter for clean energy development and just that level of policy uncertainty. On the other hand, like, these are things to celebrate, that businesses have gone forward on clean energy. And we are not where the markets were a decade ago when the clean energy industry was far less developed. And we have seen huge progress on that end.
You know, the other thing that I've been curious about when I saw that Trump won and we were talking about climate policy is that deal that Obama and the leader of China made on hydrofluorocarbons. That was a big deal. It didn't get a huge amount of attention. Paul and I talked about it on the ClimateCast. You wonder if President Trump says, well, this is going to cost us money to pursue this and we're withdrawing from this, or whether China would maybe apply some pressure to not step out of it. You have any sense of that?
Well, it was already uncertain whether that deal would have to go to the Senate for ratification, unlike the Paris Climate Agreement. And you're going to see and have already seen Republicans insist that this has to go through the Senate, and that is where it is most likely to die. In terms of international pressure, it is really interesting because we saw a Chinese environmental official weigh in on the U.S. election days ago about how the U.S. should continue its leadership on climate. And to see those remarks, it was pretty much unheard of to have a Chinese official weigh in so frankly on how this election could change the course of global climate.
Rebecca, good to have you on the ClimateCast. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Rebecca Lieber is a climate politics and policy reporter for Grist. Paul, some of the other stuff that you're thinking about this week.
Well, just to quickly touch on that last point you made, too. China is the world's largest provider of renewable energy jobs now.
Right.
So that train is
Hillary
also
Clinton
rolling.
Talked a lot about that during the campaign.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see the dynamics there. Right. Look, here's what's going on that's unusual in terms of climate on planet Earth right now. It's affecting us here in Minnesota. The Arctic is essentially broken, at least for this fall. Temperatures have been 20, 30 degrees warmer than average all the way through the Arctic Ocean, all the way through central northern Canada and into the U.S. That's why we've been having this mild fall. Snow cover, Carrie, which should be now climatologically just about down to the Minnesota border with Canada, is still snow-free ground way up into north central Canada.
Really?
So as these air masses come down, they're warm. The sun warms that ground instead of the snow cover, and that's one of the reasons we're seeing the warmest start to November on record, why we've got this latest freeze on record, the longest growing season, is because the Arctic essentially is not capable of delivering the cold air that it would normally deliver to the U.S.
Did you say the temperatures were on average 20 to 30 degrees higher than they are?
They have been. They were actually melting ice in the Arctic in November.
That's
for
unreal.
A few days this month, and Arctic sea ice is still at its lowest on record for this time of year. So that is a very interesting and weird sort of climate dynamic going on right now. Does look like we'll get some colder air in about 10 days to 2 weeks, but it has been a crazy fall across North America.
Paul, I will see you next Thursday for the ClimateCast. Thank you.
Thanks, Carrie.